Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further faster. Today, we're talking about one of the best-kept secrets of leadership. Andy, today we're going to listen to an excerpt from a recent talk that you did. And at the beginning of the talk, you said that you wanted to start with two of the best-kept secrets in leadership.
Yeah, I really do think these are two of the best-kept secrets. Then here they are. The less you do, the more you accomplish. And the less you do, the more you allow others to accomplish. The less you do, the more you accomplish. The less you do, the more you allow others to accomplish.
Now, when you say less, though, you mean...
Yeah, I don't mean a shorter work week or more vacation. I mean the fewer things. As organizations grow and as organizations become more complex, leaders, division leaders, the entrepreneurs, the presidents, people at the top of the organization have to continue to back out of boxes and do fewer things, spend more time on fewer things. That's what I mean by less.
Yeah. You also talk about a couple of myths that leaders really buy into.
Yeah. Well, I think intuitively it would sound like to become a great leader, I need to strengthen my weaknesses. To be a great leader, I should be good at everything.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think you're right. I think most of our leaders listening today are going, yeah. Isn't that what I'm supposed to do?
And, it really is a myth. I think that is propagated or encouraged by the fact that when we see great leaders in public, whether it's on television, which is where we mostly see people we consider great leaders, or we read their biographies, it seems like they're great at everything. My dad is a well-known pastor and great leader. And even growing up, I just thought, he can do everything. So as young leaders move into leadership, the tendency is to think, well, I need to be great at everything. So I'm going to kind of economize on my strengths and try to be good at the things that, I'm not naturally good at.
Yeah. So when did you first become aware of this, I guess, as a leader?
Gosh, I think I learned this the hard way. And it's one of the reasons I love to talk about it, because I think if somebody had come along early on in my leadership and said, Andy, your tendency is going to be to try to do everything and be great at everything. If they had planted the seed of this idea in my mind early, I think it would have been huge. But I would say probably 8 or 9 years into leadership, it finally dawned on me that my fully exploited strength was of far greater value to the organization than my marginally enhanced or shored up weakness, that a weakness would always be a weakness. So for me, my greatest contribution to our particular organization then was public communication. But what I would do is I would kind of cheat myself and take shortcuts in terms of message preparation, and then spend the majority of my time and energy on logistics and organization and event planning and things that I just was not good at. And when it finally dawned on me, wait a minute, I need to lean into my strengths, delegate my weaknesses, that was a real game changer for me.
And that really sort of leads us to the bottom line of what today's talk is about.
Yeah, and this is hard for people. You and I have talked about this. I think that for leaders, the target we should shoot for, and I think this is impractical, it's unrealistic, especially early on in leadership, but the target to shoot for is to only do what only you can do. To only do what only you can do. That is to ask the question, where do I add the greatest value to my organization, and how can I spend the majority of my time in that one thing or those one or two things? And again, I'm not sure anyone actually gets there, but I think as long as that's the goal, that's what we're leaning toward, that's the responsibility of the leader. And that's how a leader adds the greatest amount of value to their organization.
Yeah, I totally agree, but I also know there's some people out there listening who are thinking, sure, you're sitting in a multi-million dollar facility, you're 15 years in at North Point, got a lot of experience under your belt, and they're like, I agree, but I'm starting a new business. I'm starting a new church.
Right.
It's like, really, only what I can do?
Well, I'm very aware of that tension. We both are. When we began, I'm sure you remember this. We had just read The E-Myth, and in that book, the author suggests that when entrepreneurs are beginning an organization, they should do an org chart of what they want the organization to eventually look like. And we did this. We sat down, there were five of us, and we created little boxes, this giant org chart of a large, large church. And then, as the author suggested, we went in and put our initials in each one of those boxes. Remember that? So, from facility, and we didn't have any facilities, to lawn maintenance, we didn't have a lawn, all printing.
I got to do the newsletter.
Yeah, the newsletter, we didn't have a newsletter. We thought of everything a large church would need.
Right.
Then we put our initials in all those boxes. So we all had about 20 jobs.
Yeah.
And then over time, we began working our way out of and hiring our way out of those jobs. Now, my point is this. Early on in a career, early on in a startup, it's natural and necessary for leaders to do everything. It's natural because leaders set the pace, they set the tone, they establish the work ethic, they establish the level of excellence. So consequently, early on in any enterprise, it's natural for leaders to do or to try to do everything. It's necessary because there's nobody else to do it, and thus our giant org chart. But what begins as natural and necessary becomes a stumbling block if leaders don't understand early on, even though it's natural and necessary now, over time I've got to work my way out of some jobs. I've got to, again, exploit my strengths, delegate my weaknesses. And again, if that's the idea, if that's the understanding, if that's the goal, then what begins as natural and necessary becomes a stepping stone or a step toward a healthy organization. But if leaders don't know this going in, or in my case, spend 7 or 8 years, you know, trying to be good at things I was never going to be good at, you hurt yourself and you ultimately hurt the organization.
Yeah. And as you said, the principle is hard to argue with. It makes sense, but it's very easy to miss. And so in the talk we're going to join, you talk about the 5 reasons leaders often miss this. So we're going to join the talk and come back and unpack the ideas.
What I'm about to share with you is very, very, very difficult to recognize in the mirror. It is so easy to recognize it in the lives of other leaders. It's so difficult to recognize in the mirror. Here's why some leaders miss this principle, Roman numeral 3. Some leaders miss this principle because they buy into the myth of being well-rounded. Your goal as a leader is not to become a well-rounded leader. Your goal as a leader is to create and to build a well-rounded organization. And those are 2 very, very, very different things. Your goal is not to become a well-rounded leader where you're good at everything. Your goal is to build a great organization, listen, that reflects your strengths but does not reflect your weaknesses. And the only way for that to happen is for you to get as good as you can get at the things you're gifted to do and to delegate the things that you're not ever going to be great at. Here's a tip, I put it in your notes. Great achievers are not well-rounded. They are men and women who play to their strengths and delegate their weaknesses. Letter B. The other reason leaders miss this, as obvious as it may seem, leaders forget to distinguish between their authority and their core competencies. Leaders forget to distinguish between their authority and their core competencies. Every leader, this is so huge, this is the easiest one to miss. Every leader has authority over things they're no good at. Every leader has authority over things they're no good at. When you forget to distinguish between your authority and your core competencies, you will leverage your authority, because you're the authority, in areas where you're no good, and you will misleverage your authority. Now, some of you have experienced this, because you're the student ministry, and the senior pastor keeps trying to tell you how to do student ministry, right? I'm guessing that wasn't the senior pastor. And it's like you're so frustrated, you're going, leave me alone. But let me tell you about the senior pastor. He or she thinks they know better. This is very difficult to see in the mirror. So here's your tip on this one. Leverage your authority as little as possible. Make as few decisions as possible. This is a gigantic leap forward in your leadership if you'll just do this one thing. Make as few decisions as possible. Ask and force other people to make the decisions. Great leaders say this a lot. I'll let you make that decision. I'll let you make that decision. Wow, yeah. I'll let you make that decision. In fact, some of you have never said that before, so we're going to practice. You repeat after me. Type A personalities, you might just have to mumble it. I realize this may be way too much for you to be able to do. All of you control freaks, this seems like it's not even biblical, okay? Let me tell you why. Because, I'm telling you, in the world you live in and in the world you grew up in, you have confused authority with competency. You will always have authority over things you're not very good at. Don't confuse those 2 things. So just repeat after me. You ready? I'll let you make that decision. Let me hear you say it. Now come on, with some conviction. I'll let you make that decision. Now here's the tough one. I don't really know what we should do. I'll let you make that decision. Here we go. That is great leadership. If you don't believe me, let me ask you, raise your hand. How many of you would love to be able to go back in time and have one of your bosses or leaders have said that to you at a critical junction in your organization or in your life or your ministry? That's right. But they wouldn't do that. You know why? Because they thought, since I'm the authority, I must make the decision. Great leaders don't make all the decisions. You know why? Because great leaders understand I'm an authority, but I have no idea what the right decision is in that area because that's not my area. Remember, don't think about your boss. Think about you. You're here. They're not. Letter C. Some leaders are not able to distinguish between their competencies and their non-competencies. That is, they just don't know what they're good at. Now, here's the difference. In the previous one, the person says, you know what? I don't really know that much about children's ministry, but since I'm the senior pastor, I need to make the decision because they've confused authority with competency. In this one, this is the leader that really doesn't know that they don't know. This is the leader that really doesn't know what they're not good at. Tip. You are not the smartest person in your organization. You are just the leader. Okay? You're not the smartest. Listen, I tell my staff this all the time. The reason I'm the senior pastor at North Point Community Church is because I got here first. That's it. We have over 300 employees. We got a guy with a MBA from Harvard. I am not the smartest person in the organization. I just got there first. That's why I'm in charge. You know why I'm in charge? Because in church world, if you're the best speaker, they say, hey, why don't you be in charge? See, some of you go to churches and your senior pastor is a great speaker. He couldn't lead his way through a staff meeting. But in church world, if you can keep people awake for 30 minutes, hey, you be the captain. Little sidebar. This is why I love multi-site church. I love video church. You know why? Because, man, I got some guys. I can say, you know what? You don't have to keep people awake 30 minutes in a row. You just go out there and lead your brains out because you're way, way, way better leader than I ever dreamed of being when I was your age. You are not the smartest person in your organization. So why in the world would you want to make all the decisions? Listen, don't answer this out loud. Do you really want the level of decision-making to be limited to your IQ? Let's just be selfish and self-centered for a minute. Wouldn't you look better if you figured out how to leverage the brain power of the entire organization? Because, senior pastor, when you make a great decision, people think, when a great decision is made, you get the credit anyway. Now, if you don't think that's true, isn't it true that when a bad decision is made, you get all the blame? Well, you may not have made a great decision in a long, long time, so let me assure you, when you finally make one, or when your church finally makes one, people will think you're a great leader, and you may have come to that conclusion by saying to the people around you, I'm going to step out of the room, and you guys decide, because I'm not the smartest person here, but I am in charge, and I'm deciding not to decide. Let me know. Tell me what you come up with. I tell people all the time, the greatest ideas we've come up with at our church, none of them were my idea. Twice I've been outvoted by our elders, like 9-1 and 10-1. I mean, it wasn't even close. I mean, I argued, I visioneered and I cast vision and I told them and it was all gonna be awesome. No, I don't think so, Pastor. No, Andy, can't do it. Nope, bad idea. No. 9-1. 10-1, two times in the history of the church. And they were exactly right, and I was exactly wrong. We made two incredible decisions, and people think, wow, Andy, wow. I'm going, if they had done it my way, we would have been wrong. We would have made two really dumb, one architectural decision and one financial decision. But we made a great decision, because I learned a long time ago, I'm not the smartest person in the room. I'm just in charge, for now. All right, letter D. Some leaders feel guilty delegating their weaknesses. This is me. I feel like if I don't wanna do it, nobody wants to do it, so I better do it, which is ridiculous, but this is how I think. Well, nobody wants to do that job. I don't wanna ask anybody to do it because nobody wanna do that, so I'll do it. I'm no good at it, but nobody would want to do that. And I'm absolutely wrong. Here's the tip. Your weakness is somebody else's opportunity. The thing you're no good at is somebody else's opportunity to shine. The thing that you're just at best, you're going to be a C+. For somebody, that's a, oh my gosh, are you kidding? I get to do that? And you can't imagine that's true because you don't enjoy it. You don't want to do it. Somebody wants to do that stuff. Your weakness is someone's opportunity. So quit playing in that pool. You're no good at it anyway, and allow somebody to get in there that knows how to do that. Every once in a while, when I'm meeting with Diane, my assistant, on Thursday, we're going through the mail and the email. She's got all these details, and we got a calendar all spread out. And she's got all, I mean, it's just, she's so organized. And sometimes I say, Diane, I hope this doesn't hurt your feelings, but I would hate your job. And she says, Andy, I would hate your job. I go, that's awesome. Let's go. We got it. Okay, letter E. Some leaders won't take the time to develop other leaders. That's the problem. One of the reasons this doesn't work is because some leaders aren't going to take the time to develop other leaders. Tip, leadership is not primarily about getting things done right. Leadership is about multiplying your efforts through the efforts of others. Or leadership, I should say, is about getting things done through other people. It's not about getting things done right. And here's a challenge we all have. And in fact, I would love to spend 20 minutes on this topic. There's so much I've learned in the past few years about this. If you want great leaders in your organization, you have to allow them to do things you wouldn't do, and you have to allow them to make mistakes, and you have to allow them to waste money. And that's hard. If you want to get and keep great leaders, you have to allow them to lead, which means you have to allow them to chase some of their crazy dreams and some of their crazy ideas, and you and your infinite wisdom, they leave the room and you sit in your office and you say, God, me and you know that ain't gonna work. But here's my dilemma. Do I want to be right, or do I want to be surrounded by great leaders?
Andy, that last question's a bit disturbing. I want to read it. Do I want to be right, or do I want to be surrounded by great leaders? Talk about that.
Yeah, that's not very intuitive. Maybe an illustration would help. When I was given my first leadership opportunity, I was very fortunate because I walked into a mess. And I had supervisors that knew something needed to be done. They did not know what to do. The reason that was a great opportunity for me is they didn't micromanage me. So they sort of stuck me in this mess. It was in a church context. And they said, hey, try to fix that. Well, they gave me a lot of support, but they didn't tell me how to do what I was going to do. So consequently, I made a lot of mistakes. But in making those mistakes, I eventually figured out what needed to be done and was successful, I feel like, yeah, in that particular role. So when I say to leaders, you've got to make a decision. Do you want to be right about everything, or do you want to surround yourself with great leaders? Leaders love to be given it. We love a challenge. We want to be told what to do, but we don't love to be told how to do it. Yeah. So if you micromanage a leader, you essentially run them off. Right. But if you don't micromanage a leader, they're liable to do some things differently than the way you do them. They're liable to make some mistakes. So I feel like in both of my my first two leadership opportunities, the people who hired me supported me, but they didn't micromanage. So now as a leader, it's just easy to remember that. So as we think about the young leaders in our organization, next generation leaders, I try my best to give them the latitude, to give them the space, the margin to actually lead, which means I've got to allow them to make some mistakes, spend some money in ways that I wouldn't necessarily spend it. But if I don't do that, ultimately, I think we run off the best and brightest leaders.
Yeah, so you remember experiencing this firsthand.
Yeah, in fact, we were together in one of these. We worked at a downtown church, and our church had bought property out in the suburbs. Right. It was a bunch of warehouses. And they sent the two of us and a handful of other people out to begin services in a warehouse. Well, nobody knew how to do church in a warehouse. People do it all the time now, but, you know, 17 years ago, 18 years ago, this was a brand new thing. And so we were so fortunate. They said, we don't know how to do it. We want you to figure out how to do it. And they gave us the latitude to make some mistakes, again, to spend some money, maybe in ways they wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. But I think both of us would say that, you know, our leadership quotient escalated during that time because we had the opportunity. So again, we didn't do everything right, but we were a part of that organization and made a huge contribution. Right. So now that I'm on the other side, now that we're on the other side, I just want to make sure we create an organization that allows next generation leaders, young leaders, to lean into what they're good at, but that means they have to have an opportunity to figure that out right. along the way.
So they let us do what they couldn't do.
They let us do what they couldn't do, but they supported us. Right. It was a win for us. It was a win for them. But I think we've probably both been in situations where we were given an opportunity, a responsibility, and then somebody just stood over our shoulder and kept saying, no, and I wouldn't do it that way. And you know, for leaders, that's not a comfortable environment to work in.
So as we really launch these leaders, our role is to help them do what only they can do.
Right. And I think one of the great takeaways from this idea, and hopefully from this talk, is that the leaders who are listening would try to figure out not only how to incorporate this principle into their lives, but how to build it into the organization through testing, through constant evaluation, through giving leaders different opportunities, taking their hands off, understanding they're going to make some mistakes, because it's how you encourage and develop leaders, and it's how to make sure that the leaders don't start looking for other opportunities outside the organization. So you and I have to lean into what we're best at. We've got to create an organization that frees other leaders up to do the very same thing.
Right, because the only way to learn to lead is to lead.
Is to lead, that's right. One of the questions that I'm commonly asked by leaders is, what is your development program for young leaders? You know, you're talking about leadership all the time. You know, what do you do for young leaders? And as you know, we have some instructional environments. We have some training environments. We suggest a reading list. We do kind of all the normal formal things. Mm-hmm. But reality is that probably the best thing we do is give leaders opportunities and then take our hands off and really try to be in a coaching role and stay in a coaching role so that we create that win-win. They have the opportunity to make mistakes, right. but they have a backup plan. Financially, they have a backup plan in terms of coaching, because really the only way to learn to lead is to lead.
Yeah. Well, Andy, thanks so much for spending this time with us, and thanks for joining us on the podcast. We'll see you next month.
If you find these leadership principles helpful and would like to go deeper, check out the Andy Stanley Leadership Essentials DVDs. Each DVD includes both full talks as well as work team-focused segments, along with questions ideal for individual growth or use with your staff. In addition, each DVD includes Going Deeper bonus content. Head to northpointresources.org/leadership. That's northpointresources.org/leadership to learn more.